through living here, I guess a lot of comedy comes up because I don't know, it's just like through the sometimes through the difficult parts, we can, you know, have all these creative ideas.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivke Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Deep Meaningful Conversations. The deep and meaningful conversations we bring to you on DMC are possible this year thanks to Town Appliance. So Rifki, let's talk a little bit about our experience buying home appliances. Anything you do differently?
Oh, man. You know, yes, I would call Town Appliance. That's what I would do first. Yeah, I don't know. It's like it's always this thing where like I feel like whenever I've needed to buy an appliance, it's because I've had one that is like broken and not working. And so it's always like b'shas t'chak. It's like, I'm like desperate.
Ah.
I'm like, just give me something. I don't care. Give me anything. But right. It's like, that's not.
Like you don't have time to do the research or anything like that.
Yeah. Like I need like, an oven and it's like expensive.
That's interesting. That all, I'd imagine that's not uncommon.
I would imagine also that's when things break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I'll just go straight to the big box stores online. But I find when I try to do research on like fridges that are Shabbos compliant, I find it very overwhelming. I find the lists online very difficult to navigate. So I am the one now that has a fridge that has a piece of tape on the thing for Shabbos.
we also with the, for the light?
For the light. But there are Shabbos refrigerators that like if I call a Town Appliance and was like, listen, this is the fridge I need. It needs to be Shabbos. What's the word Shabbos? There's a special word for it.
I don't know, compliant?
Yeah, no. Something like that.
Sabbath mode.
They would be like, oh, well, this is the one you should get. I'm like, thank you. Click. Simple. Yeah, and then they would deliver it to me. So now I know.
So, I'm not saying that I want my appliances to not last. I want them to last, but I definitely will be calling Town Appliance the next time I need an appliance for sure.
Well, we really are pleased to promote Town Appliance as your obvious choice, no matter where you live, which is the best part. So please visit our show notes for links and contact information. And thank you, Town Appliance, for being DMC's 2023 show sponsor.
Yes. Yid Cards is our sponsor for today's episode of Deep Meaningful Conversations. I am super excited to tell you about this awesome company that lets you create and send custom digital invitations, curate your guest list, and manage RSVPs. RSVPs.
They all the of worst. These things very triggering, but
I am also the worst at RSVPs. I will be the first to admit it. I'm so sorry to everyone who's ever sent an invitation.
So, but like the whole invitation process, I think can be very triggering and
so stressful.
Very stressful. You're planning so many things about a simcha, and what's awesome, I think, about Yid Cards is this is all together on one digital platform that you could do all of that all at once, and they keep track of everything. So Amazing. It's like about time, no?
Yeah, definitely. You can also like. So the site features gorgeous customizable digital invite templates. They're stunning. You can also customize animated envelope design, which is cool.
It makes a difference, by the way. I find when I get those digital invites.
Yeah, like and if the I envelope opens. Exactly. Yes. Finally, you can create your guest list and send unlimited free messages through their website. There are multiple event categories, including chasna, afruf, and sheva brachos, vort, kiddush, bris, bar and bas mitzvah, and upsharon.
Everything.
The Yid Cards messaging system provides free email, WhatsApp, and text delivery to unlimited contacts.
No, that's great. And they also feature really beautiful design trends and invitations, which is like a whole field in and of itself. I visited their website. It's really user-friendly, very clear, streamlined. And we make it easy for you. Just visit our show notes for that link and contact information, and you can get started on creating your custom invitation and RSVP list for your next upcoming simcha.
Amazing. Let's get this DMC started.
Hi, Hi again. Well, we're releasing this episode just in time for Purim, and we're going to be talking to Zeya, who is such a queen when it comes to kosher comedy.
Oh, yeah. She cracks me up.
Yes, yes. I love when she says in her interview, just people stop her in the street, like, make me laugh. Like, it's a drug. Like, just give me some humor. She's like, I can't just switch it on and off. You may have seen her shows or seen her videos online. She's on YouTube, she's on Instagram, Facebook, and she's going to be telling us how she got into this unusual field for From Women, and also share some laughs for us to take with us as we, you know, get ready for Purim.
Yes. I don't remember when I found her on Instagram, but like I just remember just laughing and laughing and laughing. Like I was before we were recording this interview, I was at an exercise class, and like literally they were talking about one of her latest posts, like as I walked in. It was just like she's everywhere, and she's just so funny and mm-hmm. relatable and just like spot on with her different characters. I just love it. Like they're so real, the people that she's created, and they're all so funny. Right.
She's like, you have to be a good actress because you actually create a character and like get yourself in character like that. It's pretty impressive. Yeah, it's
fantastic.
And something I really appreciate her about Zeya, about her, that really came through this interview is, you know, she's very real and authentic through her comedy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's sort of capturing our reality that we're all going through, but also poking a little fun and leaving us a little bit of food for thought too.
Yeah.
So, in the spirit of Zeya, let's get real and authentic, Rifki, about Purim, shall we?
Okay, let's do it. sounds good to me. So, let's talk about the range of real feelings and experiences From Women have about this very unique holiday in the Jewish calendar. Mm-hmm. I will go first. I have such a memory of when we were newly married. I don't know if I had two kids yet or just one, and I remember thinking that I'm going to give out grape juice and hamantaschen for Purim, but I decided to start making the hamantaschen Purim morning.
Oh, that was so smart, Rifki.
No, it was not smart. It was a disaster. It was so stressful.
I'm just being facetious.
I know. I'll never forget that. I was like, oh, that didn't work.
Also, like, if you think about it, like, oh, how lovely, it's Purim, let's celebrate and get in the mood by like making hamantaschen of all days. It's a perfect day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then like later I saw people would like make it on Rosh Chodesh. I was like, I don't know, just so many things. Also, like, not growing up celebrating the holiday, like I had no idea what I was doing. Mm. So it took me time. Like, I didn't even know that themes were a thing until many, many years later. Mm. I was like, oh, that's like a thing people do. Mm. Oh, that's so interesting. And so I've gone through just my own like evolution of like deciding like how exactly do we want to celebrate Purim as a family. Mm. And I have a Word doc, like a Google doc that I have. I write like, who did we give to last year? How many leftovers did we have? Like, who did the kids give to? What are the addresses?
That's so smart.
Yeah. I'm very type A. Mm. And like, it's just like the way that my brain works. And I remember I just like wrote a note from last year, like, spend more time on the kids' shalachmanos than the adult ones. Because at this point, at this stage, like, those are the ones that matter more. Like, we'll do our mitzvah, we'll, you know, whatever, we'll right. obviously. And I'll make them beautiful, Bezos Hashem. But at the same time, it's like, I'm just noticing, like, each year, like, as my family shifts and grows, like, and the kids get bigger, like, there's, like, different values that take precedence. But, like, the thing that is for me is like I have like this disconnect between like what I would like to do and like what realistically I can do with the 24 hours that exist within the day and my mm-hmm. other obligations. Mm-hmm. And it's like that delicate balance of like wanting to make something like beautiful and memorable for the kids and for myself, and that I get like I like the creativity aspect, like I like it until a certain point, and like finding that perfect balance where like I don't get so stressed out that I'm losing it, you mm. know, because it's
a crazy day. Yeah.
It can like very easily spiral out of control. Well it can said. Very, yeah. very easily spiral. And so like I just feel like I'm always striving to find that balance between mm. like having it be like as nice as I want, that is realistic for my sanity to maintain mm-hmm, intact. Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting you mentioned like how that shifted and adapted for you the day and your celebration of it as your children have gotten older. And I think Purim, out of all holidays, is most reflects that adaptation of our family as our family changes and our children are growing. You know, like when you have teenage boys, like now you're dealing with, you know, where is your child?
I'm not there yet. I'm almost, trying not to think about it.
Actually, you are. You do have a teenage boy.
No, I know, but he's not like going collecting yet.
Well, there's the collecting. There's, is he drinking safely? Is he drinking at all? Like, there's a whole nother level that of things to be thinking about or being yeah. concerned about.
I was
as
just talking with a friend about
older.
That literally this morning.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah.
Right. And then it's like, And then like, oh, then you're like, oh, remember the good old days when we were just like,
when we were just toddlers and we could do it, we could dress them whatever they wanted. And they didn't have opinions.
And they didn't complain about it. Exactly. So, it takes a lot of flexibility as parents, to, and I don't want to say get through the day, but sometimes, yeah, sometimes it sort of is that, you know, there's family dynamics. You and your spouse are both home. You're both figuring out schedules together. Maybe your husband normally is at work and you don't have to deal with logistical stuff with him, but this day is all about logistics.
Right, right. And like, you know, and I'm sure that we're not the only people in the world who have different, like, you know, ways of viewing logistics.
Exactly. Like how you're going to be like, well, we're leaving at 12 to deliver to the Rebbe. And then they're like, well, I'm still in the bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not ready to go anywhere. You know, like maybe I'm speaking from experience. I don't know.
Hypothetically speaking.
So, you know, there's certain, I just think, you know, we're talking about acknowledging the feelings and experiences of women. Like, you know, we all say it. We just have a nice platform at DMC to say it out loud once again. Do just want to acknowledge that for some women, it's a very challenging day. I want to acknowledge for many women, if there's any alcohol abuse in a family, it is a frightening day. It can be a frightening day. And I just would like to say that out loud. It's not a simple thing. Obviously, I don't mean to diminish the beauty and the joy and just the fun and release of the day. We have a lot on our plates as women. If we're making the perm suda, often we may be the ones who are like really holding down the fort, like creating the schedule of who's delivering when. And, you know, it's a lot of balancing. And I think it's okay if we have mixed feelings, honestly, that I feel, though, just to wrap this piece up, like we've talked about as well before, is like, anytime there are expectations, it can really set us up for disaster. And by nature and default, perm has lots of expectations.
Yeah.
And we want, and it's meant to be happy. And so then when you're crying or when your kid's crying, you're like, what does that mean to me?
It's like going to Disney World. It's like going to Disney World.
Yes.
You will be, this is the happiest place on earth. You will be happy.
And then everyone's wearing these t-shirts, best day ever. And you're like, this better be.
Like the kids tantruming on the pavement. Yeah, exactly. I think that you captured it very well. It's true. Like, we're supposed to be happy on Purim. But like you said, like, listen, life is complex and it's not always so simple. And it's not, and there are mixed feelings often for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't know, like when, yeah, I mean, not to simplify, but I'm good at simplifying, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or I just want to make things simple because it's so much easier.
It's so much easier. It's very helpful.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, when we get to the point where we can say, like, it's going to be mixed feelings, there's going to be tantrums, there's going to be disappointments, but like to still try to tap into something, like one thing, if there's one nakuda that we find meaningful mm-hmm. in Purim that we can connect to, that we can say, hold on to this one point, whether it's tefillah or whether it's simcha or whether whatever it is, you know, or whether, like, you know, the idea of, like, you know, salvation coming in the blink of an eye, like from unexpected direction, you know, whatever it is that we can connect to hold on to when we have a difficult moment or if it's a day of difficult moments.
Right. And I would also add maybe to like let go of something, like keep that as a mantra. Like, what am I going to let go of now? Yeah. Or what am I going to let go of next to make this a smoother process? Because I find the dichotomy of Purim being a very both unstructured and structured day, right? Like, I need to make sure I get to Megillah reading. I need to, you know, make sure we get the mincha at 3 o'clock or whatever it is. Yeah. But it's also like flying. Like, that can be, some people thrive on that. Some people it's harder, you know? So like acknowledging, like, by nature, it's okay. There's just going to be super high points and there may be some low points too. And it's very normal and it's very much the nature of this day.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see what Zaya has to say.
Yeah.
And let's hear also about, I'm just so curious what her journey has been entering this field. And we're going to tap her in to like get some ideas about Purim that she can share with us.
Yeah. With all this in mind, we'll bring you our DMC with Zaya.
Hey, Zaya, welcome to DMC. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited for this convo.
Totally.
Okay, so we must know about you as a kid and as a teenager. Like, first of all, just tell us what it was like growing up, the type of home that you grew up in, your personality, and that, like, emerging Zaya. Did you have a penchant for comedy back then? That's what I'm really curious about.
Yeah, the famous question. I just woke up one day and I was like, all right, I'm going to be funny today. I grew up in Canada, but I was born in Israel. So my parents are Israeli. A lot of my comedy comes from, you know, the cultural differences, you know, living in outside of Israel with Israeli parents. And so we didn't grow up religious. So I don't really have any, you know, background of, you know, observant or anything like that. But so I watched a lot of TV growing up.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I always wanted to be an actress. So like there was some sort of, you know, passion there for acting, which has a lot to do with, you know, when you're creating content and, you know, standing in front of a live audience. So I love acting. I love certain, you know, actors like Robin Williams and Jim Carrey, Chris Farley, one of my favorite, like some of my favorites. And, you know, growing up, I would say I was funny, like to my friends, you know, mm-hmm. like my friends thought I was funny. I was kind of like out of the box because just we weren't like the normal Canadian family.
Right, you know? I can imagine.
We had a lot of, yeah, like we were the loudest, like everybody, like there was a lot of yelling, but that's just normal. That was just a normal way of talking. You know, I remember my friend would come over and she'd be like, I'm sort of like scared of your mom, you know, is your mom? Like, you know, and I'm like, no, this is normal. This is normal conversation, you know?
Wow.
So, yeah, and I did imitations a lot. That was really, really, I would say, like, the beginning. When I was, you know, young girl, teenager, my parents always wanted me to imitate people in front of their friends. They're like, do this lady, oh, do that lady, you know? So that's really... The beginning days.
I think there's such an art to imitation, though. Like, when you see how people do it right, I'm like, I could in my mind, like, imagine how a certain actor speaks or something, but to actually, like, make that sound come out of your mouth is pretty impressive.
Yeah. You know, some people are, like, they send me, you know, after they see me imitate, like, on a big platform like Instagram, so they'll send me messages, and they'll show how they imitate, too, but they're too shy to put it on the screen, you know?
Yeah.
So... people really like to do it. It's fun. Nowadays, it's kind of tricky because you don't want to make fun of someone. So,
but, right. Yeah. Like you don't want to get canceled.
Exactly.
Another conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a whole topic.
Yeah. We won't unpack that right now, but, you had like, I think the makings, right, of a kosher comedian, like with the impersonations, that's not even a word, impersonation. Thank you. Help. So how did it, I would love to hear like the transition from like, you know, doing imitations, like, you know, for your parents' friends. And then how did you get to from point A to point B to doing kosher comedy on like such a level?
Yeah, it's, you know, as I was, you know, thinking through this process, like, you know, people have asked me this in the past, but it really is fascinating to see how it just developed without me sort of like planning it, you know. I didn't have any type of plan like that this would kind of, what I'm trying to say is I didn't have this dream of like, I'm going to be doing that when I'm 35 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it wasn't your five-year plan.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that. So it slowly started, like I would say before social media days, I would do plays. I love to do plays. When I first became religious, I went to a Bel Tshuva seminary in New York. And over there we had like, you know, so I just found out about Purim, right? Like I knew about it, but it was like not really, I didn't know anything, the story, Esther Achashverosh, I had like no idea. And so we did a play there. And then there was a clown, a lady that like she was a clown and she was a professional like entertainer from Brazil. And she was like, hey, do you want to come to different schools with me and we could do different shows? And I was like her sidekick.
You know what I'm saying?
It was fun. Yeah, we went to different schools and I just like went along with her. And so that was part of, you know, the acting. I really like doing that. And then after like, you know, I would say like 7-8 years ago when Facebook was a big deal, I one day just randomly posted a funny video of my brother and I, it's called The Interview. And that was our first video that we did. And
he's younger or older?
He's older than me. Yeah. So the feedback was just insane. It was crazy. Like, you know, people shared it and, you know, like back then it wasn't like such a, you know, Facebook wasn't like whatever, but it just, people started sharing it and sending it and like whatever, giving me feedback and stuff. And I realized it was like an indication that this is fun. Like people really want to laugh and, you know, like maybe there's a talent and maybe I have a talent, you know, I was just discovering it. And, then I posted another video. This was all on Facebook and things just went from there. You know, people were like, oh, when is your next one coming? When are you doing another one? And so that was really fun. And I like through Facebook, someone messaged me. They're like, would you do a stand-up comedy for this very big event? And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never done that. And it's going to be right away. It's not like you go into a little, you know, those like bars where they do stand up, whatever, with like a few people. This was like a very big event. So it was like my first stand up in front of a lot of people.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, you know, let's try it out. Why not? And I had no, you know, plan of how to do it or like how do you go about it? Like, so I just started writing stories. I was like, all right, so this happened to me and that, you know, like different things that happened to me with like my Belchuva process, how my parents reacted to it, how, you know, like hilarious things like when with my name Zavit, it's like so complicated, you know, people never knew how to say my name. And so whatever, I just started writing things. And then I came up with a whole script, like a 45-minute show.
Nice.
You know? And then I went on stage and I was like, what am I doing? Oh, like right before.
Horrifying.
I was like, what on earth? I saw all the people in the crowd and I was like sitting in the crowd and they called my name. I was like, my heart was just, you know, like pumping like crazy. I was like squeezing, I think it was my mother or my sister's hand. I don't remember. And I was like, what am I doing? I just went on there and I think I said something like, forgive me, guys. I'm a little bit, this is my first time. And they clapped and they're like, you know, they're supportive. And then I just, as soon as I started saying the first thing and the second thing, it was like people were crying of laughter.
What?
Like right away, crying of laughter, like laughing. They were like, you know, and before me, there was a girl that actually was much more experienced than I am. And she was like, oh, you'll be fine. Don't worry. Just do this, do that. And I was like, oh my gosh, but what do I do if this happens and that happens? And she was really helpful. And then after the show, she was like, oh my God, you're totally meant for this. Like, wow. You know, you know what I'm saying? And as I was on the stage, I pretty much discovered that this is like that I could do this. So this is really cool.
I think it's so cool that like some people have, I mean, I don't know how many women have a career goal to be a stand-up comedian, but in general, you know, we have our career goals and like we get educated or to achieve that, or we read up and we learn and, you know, practice 100 times beforehand. But I just love how you like just fell into this using your own natural talents, but you weren't even planning this and then you became successful. That's really inspiring. It's very cool.
Yeah, that it's true. It's true. It was sort of like handed to me. Mm-hmm. And as I went along, I was like, wow, thank you, Hashem. You know, it's something that I want and I didn't even know I wanted. And I'm very grateful.
Okay. So what happened next after that?
Were you single? Were you married at this point? Like, where were you in your like life stage?
Yeah. So I was already married. I had, when I did the stand-up comedy, I was already married and, a few children. Yeah. So after that, what happened then? Yeah. So after, you know, I started going on Instagram, I was sort of hesitant to go on Instagram, you know, like I think at that point I had like 5 kids and I'm just, so like another, you know, WhatsApp chat, another Facebook, another thing, you know? So I was like, I had that hesitation and people were like, no, you have to go on Instagram. You don't understand. It's a completely different animal. You know what I'm saying? And I hesitated because I was like, I can't have another thing. So I was like, what's the point of it? But then once I went on Instagram, my reach was like, it just flew. Like it was much, much bigger. Then I started making, you know, short clips, funny clips. I posted on YouTube. Some people don't have Instagram. That's really like how it kind of developed.
How would you describe where you're at now in your career? What do you do on a typical day?
Yeah. So now actually over this past year, I would say like for a year or maybe more, like I have to be much more organized. Before it was like a hobby, you know, I'm just doing this whenever I have time, I'm going to post a video whenever an idea pops up in my head. Right. So then people started asking me to do commercials with their product or their service. I think the first person that ever asked me was Flatbush Girl. And so it was for a product that she was promoting. And so I made a video. And then I started getting paid for these, you know, commercials. And I was like, oh, you know, that's really cute. I could share content, you know, the same funny content. And at the same time, you know, get paid for it and have like promote something. So that's where I'm at now. Now it's like I have to schedule my things. I don't want it to be too much ads. I want it to be, I still want to be who I am and do my funny content. So it's kind of like much more planning and much more organization. And sometimes I get overwhelmed. But yeah, so it really has become like a job, you know. I like at a certain point I was like, wow, I actually need to buy some sort of calendar and like, you know, organize the stuff. But and then also the stand-up, whenever I have a show coming up, I, you know, everything's on hold. I have to practice. I need a lot of time to practice, and I have kids and I have my home and I have like, so it's very busy. But someone told me, they're like, you just have to say yes when you can. And, you know, if you can't, don't overbook. I live in Montreal, so I guess in a way I can't always travel to all these places that people ask me, and I'm still figuring out the mom life. And, you know,
we can like, so relate on so many levels.
People ask me, like, oh, why can't you come to a show? And I'm like, do I tell them the whole, like, all the reasons? Because, like, there's many reasons, even though I'd love to. But right now I still have, like, my twin babies. They're tiny. Like, wow. I don't know. It's like, it's going to come at the right time. And so I do pretty much local, only local right now.
And these are only for women, your shows, or?
Yeah, what is only it? For women.
Interesting.
I would love to hear a little bit more about how, you know, when you started, like when you said like, you needed to get a calendar and you needed to be a little bit more organized about the creative process. I would love to hear like how that impacted, like just actually like the creative flow, you know, because I feel like this is something that a lot of creatives struggle with. It's like, you know, there's like when you're first starting out with creativity, it's like you can do it whenever you're inspired. But then like sometimes you don't have the luxury of waiting until you're inspired. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you just hit it right on the, you know, that was exactly one of my struggles. When I have something planned, you know, I have to do this by a certain time, it's much harder for me to come up with an idea. Mm-hmm. It's like forced in a way. So I had to kind of give myself more time. So if someone asked me to do an ad, I realized that, like, you know, I can't just do it chick-chack. It has to be really, like, I need more time to figure it out because it doesn't come as quick, you know? If I'm going through something with my kids and I'm changing the baby's diaper and something funny happens, I think of the idea, I write it down, and then I do a video. But this is much more, the creativity is affected because it's more, like, once the idea comes, it's flowing, but it's until I get to that point. So sometimes I would tell them, the idea will come to me. I don't know exactly when, but... You know, and I'm sort of like a perfectionist in that aspect where I don't want it just to be whatever and like chick-chack a small clip. And, you know, I actually want it to be something funny and something that is natural to what I usually do. And I want it to work. But when there's time limits and things like that, it does, you're right, it does affect the creative process. So I guess I'm learning.
Yeah.
I have a question about like some of your videos. So like you'll use these funny filters that like make your face look all distorted, right?
Yeah.
How do you have, I feel like you have to have like a lot of bravery to be a comedian and also to like have the courage to like do something stupid, make yourself look stupid. And then how do you even know it's going to come off well and be funny? And then to take that risk, or you might just look like a total idiot. Like let's talk a little bit about, you know, like this courage that it requires, what that experience is like for you.
Right. So that's a great question. I think every time before I post, I always have a little bit of like a doubt, you know, it's like, oh, is this going to go off well? But with time, it did you know, much like it came much quicker, like that confidence, right? So in the beginning, I would be like, I don't know. It was sort of like testing, you know what I'm saying? It is tricky. You never know. You know, sometimes filters, people don't laugh at it. Like they don't get it. It's not funny. It's changing your face. Like why, you know, but I actually, you know, I don't use them like that often, but there are like two characters that I do use and people have, like they literally refer to them as real people, like, you know, it became like the Rebbitzin became like a real person. They're like, oh, when is the Rebbitzin coming with a new video? You know what I'm saying? And kids are sending me ideas for her. And I get videos, you know, that I don't always share publicly, but of kids imitating Rebbitzin Geschmack, literally.
Oh, that's like, so cute.
And then like, what would Rebbitzin Geschmack say in this situation? You know, so yeah, I mean, it did require, you know, like some like testing or like asking friends or, you know, what do you think about that? And in the beginning, I felt that like every time I asked, I would get so many opinions and I would get overwhelmed to the point where I didn't post. So slowly I realized my own, you know, my, like I learned to trust myself and to trust that this is something that I think will go well. And to also kind of say, okay, if it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well, you know? But yeah, I sort of, it's always good to have like supportive, you know, like people that you could kind of, you know, say, hey, check this out. What do you think about this? But at the same time, to know, like within ourselves, like what is, like to trust ourselves that this is something good. So now when I don't always share before, I don't show anyone. Like I'll just post. For example, my video that went viral with the Israeli airport lady. Mm-hmm. About the Ben and Jerry. So I told it to my husband the night before, and because I saw something about Ben and Jerry, the ice cream, and I was like, oh my God, Ben and Jerry, like they're gonna be real people and they're gonna try to come to Israel. And like my idea was, and he was like, all right. He didn't see it, like he didn't see what I saw, and he was like, yeah, it's good. And I was like, oh, but like, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you get the, I'm like, but do you see what I see? And then once I made the video the next day and I was like on fire in the morning, I went and I did the video. And he like, once he saw it, he was like, oh, he's like, oh my God, I would have never, you know, when you say it and when you see it, it's very different. So
I think that's a great point. When you say it, exactly. If you're trying to explain it, it's not the same as experiencing the actual sketch itself, the actual clip. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your content. What are the kinds of like issues, you know, relevant, I think, to From Life, do you like to address through your comedy?
So, I mean, I like to bring Jewish ideas to the table, things that we go through in our communities, you know, but I try not to get too political because, you know, I'll try to stick to my lane and not, you know, let's say like specifically go through a situation. I mean, I would say the only time I really like, you know, said something that was like in the news was like when the fake toes were coming out. It was like a fake for the toes. Sense. You remember that?
Of course.
So I made a funny video about that.
I remember it. Yeah. How about it was very funny.
The fake toes, right?
It was, yeah, exactly. It was fantastic. So it's like, oh, you know, the mother was like, you don't know that women wear fake toes, you know? And her son was like, what are you talking about? So, you know, like that was probably the furthest I went in the, you know, because the truth is I don't want to bash like the religious, you know, firm communities. That's not my point here. I'm religious myself. So like everyone knows that I'm honest in that aspect. They see that I lead this type of life. So so it's more to kind of like lighten up, you know, lighten up those things that come up. So I even made a video one time about Lashon Hara. Like I imitated different people, how, you know, it's such a serious thing, Lashon Hara. So, but I made fun of it, like how this person would say Lashon Hara, how that person would say it.
That's
so,
a genius idea.
So I bring it up and then, you know, maybe I'll get some feedback like, oh, you know, you shouldn't make fun of that. It's not something that you make fun of. But most of it, you know, most of the feedback, people understand that it's not like to promote Lashon Hara, you know what I'm saying?
Right, of course.
Right. And I think that it's like that kind of approach. It's so helpful because when we can laugh at ourselves and we can look at ourselves and we can, because I mean, like as people, we're ridiculous sometimes, you know,
yeah.
We can be so ridiculous. And like to go to like a Musar Shmooze about like, well, you know, you really shouldn't speak Lashon Hara because of these 25,000 reasons why it's so usher and it's so bad. But like to have someone like pointing out how ridiculous it is that like, but if we just do, like I feel like it's more effective tochacha sometimes than a Musar Shmooze, you know?
And we have to have a sense of humor when we're like consuming humor. Sometimes, you know, we take it very seriously, you know, and it's like, yeah. Oh, just lighten up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it really helps. It really helps. And it just really connects people too, you know, like something that, let's say, was so difficult for someone. Like when I posted the video about, you know, how mothers say chas v'shalom every time their kid is saying, I'm going to kill you, to their sibling. Like I made a video on that. And so all the mothers were like messaging me, like, this is what my son says. He says this to his sibling all day long. He says, I'm going to kill him. He's going to, you know, like horrible things that the kids say. And I think it really connected all these mothers that are just like internally saying chas v'shalom or actually saying chas v'shalom to their kids all day. So, you know, I think it's great to laugh at all these things. Even with like when my mom says funny words with her heavy like Israeli accent. So some people ask me like, oh, isn't she embarrassed? Like, isn't she like, aren't you like, is that okay for you to post? And I'm like, my mom really wants to do this. Like, I think it's also a cultural thing where you can laugh. So, like, not everyone could laugh about themselves. And I don't know if it's cultural or just the way you grew up or whatever it is, like your image, right? Like we didn't grow up with this idea of like, oh, like if you do that, people are going to see and your shidduch is going to get affected, right? Like we didn't have that type of mentality at all. It was like, you know, if laughing about ourselves was healthy. And I guess I realized that not everybody laughs about themselves because it's like, what do you mean? Your dignity, you're this, you're that, you know what I'm saying? But I think it's really healthy in some ways to sometimes just kind of let go. And I learned that from my mom, actually. She's just like, loves this stuff. And she even came to my last live show. And she's like, give me the hardest words, like the most difficult like English words. I want everyone to laugh. And so we did it in front of the whole live audience. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably the best part of the whole show. You know?
I love it. Like you bring her up on stage and you're like, Ma, here come like Ima, like say these words.
I went to her, actually. She was like, no, I'm not coming on the stage. So I walked over to her with the mics. So.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. And I love like this like intergenerational. I love that you learned this like approach from your mom, like just like the not taking yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. And you like you're taking this quality and then like now you're sharing it with so many women and creating a connection. I love it. Let's put our DMC Wazea on a brief hold while we give a shout out to our sponsors. Here are the quick facts to know about Town Appliance, our 2023 sponsor of DMC. We're so grateful. 1, they ship for free for orders over $1,000. 2, you can order online, www.townappliance.com. They have a huge website with a great selection. 3, they have showrooms in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore. 4, they're known for their exceptional customer service, both in-store and over the phone. And 5, they sell you what you need, not just what you want as a from customer. I love that. Because I really think that sometimes what we want is not what we need. Mm-hmm. And it really is a sign of excellent customer service to be able to navigate that and to help the customer get actually what they need. So we have all the links and contact information in our show notes. And thank you, Town Appliance.
So thank you to our episode sponsor, Yid Cards. Digital invitations, maybe you've noticed, are really the newest trend in the invitation industry. And Yid Cards is the one platform where you can create and send custom invitations, manage your guest list, review RSVPs, no more Excel spreadsheets.
That's great news. You know, I'm making a simcha not too long from now. So like this is great news.
good information to know. And on their website, you also can manage the entire invitation process from, you know, customizing your invitation design to managing that RSVP list on their website.
Yes.
So they keep track of it. And they're like, no crazy RSVP cards, which I know you love.
Oh my gosh, seriously. Or you don't have to create a special email address just to organize the...
Right. Oh, that too. Yeah.
You know, that's great.
So everything is tracked through their Yid Cards platform. You'll find all the information you need to get started on your next invitation in our show notes. So please check it out.
All right. So here's another question, which is, I don't know, I'm curious to hear what you're going to say. What was your biggest like flop, you know, as a comedian? And then also, what do you consider your biggest success? Like the highs and the lows. Let's do it.
Yeah. So like the flop, I would say that, you know, on a live show and in front of an audience, with every show, I learned something through the flop, you know, like through the difficulty. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So that really needs to be clarified before my next show. And so, for example, one show, it was the event was there was too many things happening. And so the comedy show was a bit too late and in the thing, and people already wanted to go home. And I really prepared for like a long, nice show, and I over-prepared, you know, I was so excited. You know, they had to cut me short and whatever. There was no, like the vibe wasn't there basically. It was okay, but it wasn't like, I went home and I was like, oh, okay. So it can't be past this hour. And you know, different things. And so like with every show, I really learned, you know, like to ask a lot of questions before, to make sure that I have this, I have that. Everything is, you know, like to get to know your crowd. That's also really important, which I also learned through a flop, is like, not everything works for everyone. Right. You know, so that, I would say that, I am an overthinker. So with like videos and social media aspect, I had a lot of like, I don't know if it's like a flop, but it was like on my own character, my own like anxieties, I had a lot of like things where I was like, okay, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Like if like one bad comment, two bad comments, and then like things coming and I'm like, oh, like, you know, and then I wouldn't sleep, or maybe I did something wrong, or maybe someone's going to think that I made fun of that person and I wasn't really directing it at that person. Like, I don't know, all these crazy things that happen. There's a lot of things behind the scenes of comedians, but that was also part of growing and learning. And the biggest success, to go in front of a lot of women and make them laugh and just hear that roar of laughter in a room, bunch of women just actually laughing out loud, needing tissues for their tears, like that was very, very empowering for me. Basically, you never know who you're going to impact, you know, and I realized that with the different shows that I've done, like live shows, and just people really, really need the laughter, and they've been there, and they like the fact that I was able to make them laugh just for a half an hour. That's really a huge success for me.
Oh, it sounds like there's a story there. What's the story? If you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah. I think about it often. It's like it's emotional. So after a show that I did in New York, I received a message from someone's mother, and basically the mother and the daughter came to my show, and she messaged me like really nicely. She's like, we were at your show last year. I was wondering if you have any clips of, you know, us together, you know, maybe you could look, as I saw that my husband was there filming, and I saw that he was kind of taking videos of the crowd. And he's like, we really enjoyed my daughter and I. And unfortunately her daughter passed away. And she's like, and I really want to see her, you know, videos of her smiling, because I remember her laughing, and I want to just kind of catch those videos. And I was like, whoa, my goodness, you know. And she told me like what happened. You know, she had an eating disorder, and a really sad story that happened. And so we looked through the videos, my husband and I, and we found the videos of her laughing, her and her mother, like literally laughing. And she, you know, she explained to me like what her daughter went through. I later learned, you know, about her story. And I was like, the fact that I was able to make her laugh just for those few moments, and I was watching this, I don't know her, I never met her, she doesn't, I was like, whoa, Hashem, I don't know. It was just so incredible. Just to know that, like, the impact that you could have on someone, just, you know, like putting a smile on their face, whatever she was going through, you know, I'm sure like she was going through many difficult things at that stage. And so just a little bit of relief, you know, with laughter is always a beautiful thing. And after that, before I go on shows, like a live show, I think about her. I think about her. She's like, I have a huge connection with her now. It's kind of like before my last show, I sort of like, everyone was like supporting me and telling me like, you're going to do great. But then when I thought about her and I thought about whoever could be in that crowd, maybe going through something difficult, and I could just kind of lighten up the burden, whatever it is, that gave me the most, you know, strength. So,
I don't know. I think I forget about the fact that like laughing is so therapeutic and healing, and you have no idea what people are going through in their lives when they come to see your show, and that what a gift you can provide to just give them the opportunity to just sort of laugh and let go.
Yeah. That's very profound.
Beautiful. Yeah. I want to go back before, you know, you were talking about just that experience of putting something together and like watching the response and people cracking up and crying. Like, what are the qualities of good comedy that you try to, you know, incorporate in any set?
I think like relatable, you know, things that we go, you know, if I know that it's a group of moms, if it's a group of, let's say in Montreal, there's a very big Moroccan community and I'm Moroccan. And so like, I'll try to incorporate like those type of things like that they can relate to, like what our moms did and like what we go through as parents, Jewish schools, okay, let's say Canada, like there's a lot of things to laugh about, the weather, you know, so I try to kind of think about who's going to be in the crowd. And then I just kind of think like, okay, what would they laugh at? And so I try to make things as relatable, as kind of targeted to that crowd as possible. And you know, different people laugh at different things. I'll hear one side of the room laughing at something, and then no one will laugh. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like everybody kind of likes something else. Like someone will message me something that I probably thought like that I thought wasn't funny at the show, and then we're like, oh my god, that was the best part. Wow. I'm like, really? You know?
Wow. It just goes to show you can't like think about anyone else. You just have to do your thing, you know, because if you're just thinking, oh, is this funny for that person or that person, you're just gonna drive yourself crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. At a certain point, you just kind of say, okay, like you can't please everyone in the room, and everyone's just gonna laugh at something else. So
that's great. That's
great. A great perspective. Yeah.
Okay. So Zaya, we really brought you on because perm's around the corner. And you are, you know, someone I think if we're not getting in the mood, we're going to sort of tap you and see if you can help us. So, you know, at the very least, can you help us laugh at ourselves and, you know, some of the craziness surrounding perm? What are your thoughts about this holiday? How can you get us in the right Simchadzuk frame of mind?
Okay. Okay. The pressure's on, but... it's funny because Purim, there's different stages in life, right? I have 7 kids now. Wow. So it's like, you know, a lot of pressures that I would put on myself in different stages of my life. Like, you know, like I sort of realized with time that that takes away from the holiday. It just takes away, even though I love it and I wish I could do it and I wish I could have matching things and all those fun, you know, mishloach manot, whatever. Like it's, I realized that it's not always possible. Like, and so once I kind of said, you know, I'll put a smile on my face, and everything is just much more beautiful when you have a smile on your face, even though it's difficult and you're packing up all these things and everything always falls on the mom, basically, like, you know, like, oh, just make a bunch of, you know, mishloach manot for the whole class. And I'm like, yeah, but I have, you know, a bunch of classes to do it for. So it's not so simple. But, so I kind of, you know, like to remove that pressure by just saying we will celebrate the way we celebrate in our family. Mm-hmm. The pressure from the outside, you know, even though it's beautiful and everybody wants a beautiful holiday, like it doesn't necessarily need to enter like my like realm. Like we'll do what we can, and we're going to make this holiday as beautiful as we can with whatever, you know, with our best abilities. And So as far as advice, that's what I would say. But I'll say a funny story, actually. I don't know, like when I first became modest and, you know, I went to like a seminary and I was just learning about like all the holidays, you know. And so they told us, like, I remember hearing, you know, on Purim, you could just dress however you want. There are no rules. Like, you could just do whatever you want.
Really? Anything?
Like, that's kind of like what I received. It could be like, you know, I was like 10 minutes ago, I just became religious, you know? So the message that I got was like, oh my God, you could do whatever you want. Like, you could just dress up as anything. So like, I'm living in New York in a very religious community. and so like, I walk out of the dorm and I decided that I'm going to be a guy. I'm going to be a guy, you know, with a hat, black hat. And like pants and whatever, a suit jacket. I borrowed a suit jacket from my brother, and I like took my eyeliner and I made a beard, and I walked out with pants, you know. And I don't know why, like, no one thought of telling me before, but I went to like the restaurants and, you know, with my friends. And then I was like, someone's like, yeah, like, you can't, like, you should really, you know, wear a skirt over your pants or like something like that. They didn't really mean anything, you know?
Well, I'm glad you recovered, because I really wasn't sure where the story was going.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't that bad. It was like... But yeah, so anyways, I like walked, you know, the walk of shame, like back home with my pants. But so yeah, and like, I don't know. I was trying to think of funny things, like, let's say, you know, I'm always, every Purim, I look at like what my kids bring home and I'm like, oh my God, that's such a good idea. It's so simple.
Yes.
Right?
And yes.
I always forget them.
Yes.
You know, like every year I forget the simple ideas that I liked last year. And every year I'm like, what could be simple? What could be simple? And so like one year I was like, that's it. I took an apple. Like, I don't know why. I was like, all right, I'm going to take candies and like tape it all around the apple. So like, we're covering two black. It was the most tedious, like the hardest. Like, I tried to be simple and I made it like way worse. But
I just sort of accepted that there are people that have a knack to be like physically creative and crafty and just make things look nice. And if I try to make something look nice, right, it's like that kind of thing. Like, it's going to take me too long and it's not going to look nice. So it's like, I don't even try.
And here I'm over here with like my tablescape planned out and my like fancy. I'm like,
I can do a tablescape. I can do a tablescape. There's something about setting a table I can do, but it's about actually creating a craft of some sort. Like, you know how some people have like the box, like with the shalach monos that have like the boxes that are like perfectly aligned and measured and they fit together with the ribbon. I'm like, I can't even tie the ribbon to make it look normal. I can't.
I don't know. The same thing. And I'm like, which ribbon do I buy? Like, right. I don't know. Are we going to have enough? And then we run out and then we're like, all right, so we'll just take it from that one. And we'll, like, I mean, I don't know. It's a funny holiday. Cause I mean, the truth is I never really, actually celebrated it, you know, with the giving of, you know, like, you know, the giving of food or whatever it is. Like, I never actually did that. But
you mean growing up?
Yeah, growing up. And then so later, so when I saw that, it kind of reminded me of the whole month of Adar. Actually, it's really, you know, once I figured out what it is, it's really a nice month. Like, I don't know, once it comes in, like, I don't know about you, but I feel this kind of fun, you know, I don't know, spring is coming, like just hope and like whatever, happiness. And so it kind of reminded me, I remember at first, like of like the Christmas time when there's the vibe, there's like this energy outside, everyone's like,
Like, you know, everyone's happy. In a good mood.
Yeah, exactly. So, and we actually, my father, we used to, you know, like, we would prepare, my father would prepare things for homeless people. And we would do that on Christmas, actually. That was the time that we decided that we're going to do it. And so we made, like, little packages of hats and gloves and, like, food. And we went and brought it to people in the street. So, yeah, I have that memory. But, yeah, it's like, it's really beautiful. I don't know, to just kind of have this day where everyone's giving and
right. It's hard let me say it this way. It's easy to lose sight of that. But then when you remind ourselves, like, really, this is really a nice day. We're connecting to other people. We're sharing things. It doesn't don't have to be over the top, but just that act of giving and connecting to people, it is just, it's really special. There is definitely that feeling of camaraderie in the air.
Yeah, and I love like what you said about you know, like what's out there, whatever's going on out there can stay at your threshold. Like whatever we do, like on whatever level someone wants to do it. Like maybe this is the thing that someone can look forward to all year. Like this is where they showcase the creativity. And that's also beautiful. But that doesn't mean that I have to do it that way. Like, you know, it's like we can do whatever we do, but to tap into that Adar energy like that, because like I feel like it's so easy, like when I was saying like, oh, everyone's in a good mood, yeah, except for if you're totally like stressed out beyond, then you're not in a good mood. So
yeah, I know people that really really get stressed out, but they don't even want to, like let's say like they just get really stressed from the pressure out there, and I'm like, I understand you, I understand exactly where you're coming from, because I was there too. And it's, I guess as I got older or whatever, I kind of just let go of it. Like it's so easy to let go, but it's also so difficult when you're in it. Like, yeah, but everyone's doing that in my son's class, like everyone is, but it, yeah, I think like once you get to a point, I don't know, like once I hit my 30s, I was like, all right, like, you know, like yeah.
I was just gonna say, like, I think like I think part of that is certainly developmental. Rifki and I have spoken about this a lot on the podcast in the past. Like when you reach a certain point in your life where you just stop caring what other people think to a certain extent.
To a certain extent. I mean, also, I feel like when you had twins, like that's like a pass for like everything. It's like you had twins. So like,
yeah,
it really is.
Mazel tov. Like, you know, you get out of everything. It's like a get out of everything card.
It really is. I still use it all the time.
Yeah. Never stop. Yeah, we never stop. And that's the point, is it's sort of, there's a point out of necessity where it's like, I would love to keep this up, but now I have XYZ children. And there's just only a certain point that like, I'm just not going to sleep if I have to try to keep these up at the same standard that I've kept it in the past, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And sometimes I surprise myself. Like, I'm like,
yeah, that's true.
I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. Like, and I remember I was always like the mom that was against those meetups for the kids where everyone's just like, you know, like,
oh,
like,
switch the shawl.
What is this meetup? Like everyone, like meet at this corner at 3? Like what is?
Yeah, everyone meets at the corner and everyone makes for the whole class. And it's just like this quick, like.
That's so smart, because we're just driving around the whole neighborhood.
Yeah, we don't have that in Cleveland.
We should start that.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
So yeah, so some people love it. They're like, yeah, it's so much easier. I just have to go and, you know, do that. And so I was against it for a while because I was like, yeah, but it's like. Right. The whole class I'm going to make for everyone in that class and then this one and that one. And so, I don't know, I did it last year and I was like, yeah, it's pretty good.
That's
it. It works out. Like, you know, the kid was happy. He was, you know, beaming. He got like so many of them. One of the other things I didn't like was that like he got so many.
Right.
And just, you know, all the same stuff. Not that I mind so much that I want him. I don't care, like junk food, okay, whatever, it's like one day, you know, but it was more kind of like it's nice because it's inclusive, like everyone, no one is missing out, you know. Sometimes we would just go to like 3-4 friends, mm-hmm. choose 3 people that you want to go to, and it was nice because some of the kids that live further or whatever, they were all able to be part of it. But so as I was saying, it's like I surprised myself sometimes. I went, I did it, and I was like, all right, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know?
I'm thinking about, Rifki was mentioning, like, for some women, this is, like, their chance to shine creatively. And I remember growing up, the principal of our school, they had 7 little children. And every year, the Rebbetzin would make these extravagant family costumes. And she sewed.
Wow.
And I'll never forget one year, they were Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And he was the prince. And I'm talking, like, Disney-quality hand-sewn costumes. And these, like, little – you have 7 kids, if you can imagine. Like, the little trail of 7 children, the 7 dwarves. And they were all very petite, too. It was just the most – of all the costumes I remember that year.
That's
only
so nice.
Only now as an adult I appreciate – listen, perm for me, it's, like, still smack in the middle of the winter. I'm sort of, like, burnt out, like, year-wise. Like, the spring lifts me up, summer lifts me up. But, like, by the time perm comes around, like, had enough Cleveland winter, you know? And I think back to her, like all of that time and all of that investment pre-perm that she needed to create, to set aside to buy that, you know, the fabrics and to sew everything so her children were ready for perm. And only someone who's going to do it is going to do it because they love it. You know, you're not going to do that. She had the skills to do it and because it was something that brought her pleasure and brought everyone pleasure. And I find that, I only appreciate that now as an adult. And I'm not like, oh, she's creating a standard for the rest of us. No, like, who thinks, like, at that time, we're just like, they're amazing, you know? And now I see how much work goes into something like that. And kudos to people who do that for their families. It's not for everyone, but it's really something special.
Yeah, I enjoy watching people be creative.
Exactly.
I love it. I mean, if it wasn't for them, we would all be.
But that they're our entertainment, right? Like, they, like, let them do it and, like, let us all and just smile and appreciate them.
I love that. I really love that you said that, because it's so true. When we realize later how much goes into it, if you have a family, and, like, it's true, like, the kind of, like, that downer of the winter, mm-hmm. I totally feel that. And to get out of it, like, all of a sudden, in one day, you're like, oh, let's go.
Exactly. But don't you find that hard? I find that sometimes hard with the Jewish calendar. It's like, oh! I just realized that now, dropping my kids off of school, they have these, like, funny blow up people, that are flying. Like, oh, it's Adar, time to be happy, Simcha. And I'm like, what? Like, I have to, like, switch on my emotions like that on and off. I always struggle with that. Like, I'm not feeling it just yet. Like, I know perm time will crank the music and, like, I'll get there, but, like, the rest of Adar, how in the world am I meant to get there, you know?
Liat.
Exactly.
I totally feel that. I guess it was specifically put in that time for us to just step out of it.
Right. Sometimes we have to be conscious, you know. Exactly. We have to, like, have the calendar to force us.
Yeah, Hisham's like, okay, it's enough. Now.
Mm-hmm. I know. But especially here, I find that, like, everyone's like, oh, the snow is so hard, right? The cold. But for me, it's the gray. Mm. It's just,
we have the same thing.
Right? You guys have that?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Cleveland.
So many grays. Like, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I'm excited for the day, you know? And then I look outside and I'm like, because there's so much more effort that we need to do, you know, like, mm-hmm. to just kind of stay, like, our jolly morning.
Even you, the comedians.
Exactly. It's validating.
Yeah. And I find that it's interesting that through like the difficulties and, like, you know, sometimes just thinking, like, living here is not easy. Like, my husband knows all my rants every day. Like, he's the American one, actually, and I grew up in Canada, and I brought him here, and I'm like, okay, when are we leaving? Every day, like, what's our 5-year plan?
Florida.
Florida's on our mind. But through living here, I guess a lot of comedy comes up, because I don't know, it's just like sometimes through the difficult parts, we can, you know, have all these creative ideas.
I love that. And that's the stuff we laugh at, because we can relate to all the difficult stuff, you know? And then if we could just, like you said, from the beginning of this interview, just sort of lighten up a little bit. First of all, acknowledge it. Like, we all get it. We all feel it. And that's just funny, knowing that we're not alone too.
Exactly.
Yeah. True. Like, I, you know, sometimes people come up to me and like on the street, and they're like, make me laugh. Make me laugh right now. Can you make me laugh? And I'm like, I'm really, like, not doing well right now. And then, like, and then we'll just laugh at that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It's funny. Like, I can't really be funny on demand, but, like, sometimes just laughing about our situation is just funny. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. Oh my God. This has been such a great conversation. Do you have any last laughs. There you go. Last laughs. That's great. I was going to say last words, but that's morbid. Did you have any last things that you want to share with us, Rivki, before we...
You're pretty funny, Rivki.
Sometimes. Before we say goodbye, for real, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
It's not like a funny thing, but I'll just share, you know, to conclude our whole, you know, topic of how I got into comedy and everything like that. I just want to say that, you know, it was very, very difficult for me. I'm 37 years old. I forget my age sometimes. Does it happen to you? I don't know.
Yeah. 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 Like, okay. Yeah, I don't even know.
Once you hit 40, you just,
it helps. I was born in 1980, so it makes the math easy. I have to say that does help.
Yeah.
That does make it easier. So, what was I saying? Oh my gosh, that also happens. I forget what I'm going to say. A few years ago, I didn't know, you know, what I was going to do. I didn't know that, you know, I was going to do comedy. I was really, really confused as to what my purpose here in the world is. And it was very difficult to go through that every day. I was like, okay, I'm a mom. I love being a mom. This was before the twins were born. And it was just like I just remember it being an extremely difficult, like, unsettling feeling. Mm. What am I supposed to do in this world? Like, and I was like, I don't know even what, like, if I'm creative, I don't know all these things. And I know a lot of people, you know, whoever's listening might be going through this. And I just, like, it's important for me to say it because I was, like, you know, in a stage where, like, nothing seemed, like, exciting. It was just kind of like, okay, I'm a mom. I like being a mom. I should be grateful. I'm very grateful. But, like, at the same time, like, what else am I supposed to be doing? And so I called a friend in Israel and I told her all this. And I don't know, like, I just kind of opened up the subject. It was something that was inside of me. I didn't really, like, and I just poured my heart out to her. And I hung up the phone and I just closed my eyes and I just said, like, Hashem, I really don't know, like, you know, I chose this life, this, and I love it. I like to be in it. Like, some things are difficult, obviously, but, like, I want to know, like, what I could do, like what do I wake up to every day and, like, and say, like, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and that, like, you know, something that gets you going, you know, besides, like, obviously being a parent, which is beautiful, but we all need, like, that extra thing that we do for ourselves. And so I just had that, like, session with God, and I was like, what am I supposed to do? And then slowly, I'm telling you, every day, once I opened it up and kind of, like, poured my heart out and just said what the issue was, like, slowly things were just coming to me, like we mentioned earlier. Like, things were just kind of, like, all these doors were opening, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I'll go on stage. All right, I guess I'll, you know, and then, like, things came together, and, you know, you would think, like, okay, 37, you figured it out, you know what I'm saying? But I just got this, like, deeper connection with, you know, like, Hashem just opening that channel, realizing that, like, you know, everything I do right now, like, now that I'm, whenever I post a video, I'm not just posting a video, oh, okay, whatever, I really do it with, like, intention. Mm-hmm. Like, this was kind of, like, handed to me as, you know, I asked for this. I really begged for something that I love doing and that I could, you know, have, you know, parnasa from it, thank God. So it's really something that I'm very grateful for. I don't know how long it's going to last, but for now, it's like, I'm, you know, there is hope. There's, you know, if you don't know what you're meant to do, like things will come together, and it's just, and yeah, I'm just, like, really grateful, and wow, thank you for having me here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, thank you for, this is such a perfect way to end. What an empowering message. Yes,
thank you for sharing
you.
That.
Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on this DMC, and for bringing a little extra simcha and depth to the simcha, yes, into our lives and into the lives of our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Mm-hmm. You guys are amazing. I'm so glad I met you guys.
Oh, this was a really great DMC.
That was such a great conversation. I think that, you know, it's interesting, like, getting to know the personality behind the personality. You know, there's the online persona and the professional personality, yes, and then, like, there's so much depth and reflection and just, you know, like, normalcy. You know, I'm saying normalcy is, like, because obviously as a comedian, it's like her job is to be over the top. You know what I mean? So it's just so nice to talk to her as just, like, another from woman, you know, with all of the depth and complexity that she has. It was such a nice conversation. There was something that she said at the end that really reminded me of our episode with Jackie Glazer, when she was talking about how she just, like, opened herself up to Hashem, and she just kind of, like, made herself a cliche. She was like, I don't know what I'm meant. Like, what's my special tafkid here? Like, what's my special purpose? And then when she really opened up, that's when Hashem started sending her these opportunities. Mm,
so true. It's the same type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really beautiful. Listen, she's in an unusual field for a firm woman. Let's be honest. I'm sure there are people out there who are, like, don't approve of what she does or whatever it is. But the fact that she, like, sees how Hashem guided her to do this work and she wasn't even trying, and, like, to have, you know, that confidence, like, in seeing Hashem's hand in your life, that, like, this is what I feel Hashem wants me to do. And she's doing the right thing. It's kosher comedy. She also, something that I wasn't expecting at all, is, like, the comfort and the joy that she brings to other women.
Yeah.
And those stories, it's not just about making people laugh. It's therapeutic. It's so wonderful. And it just gave me a newfound appreciation for the work that she does.
Absolutely. And I loved, she had a point about work-life balance, about, you know, how she basically does local gigs, like, saying yes to what you can, Yeah. Because as we well know, it's like not so simple to travel and to go places, yeah. especially when you have a family and what happens when you're away. So just like that perspective, that calm, like that confidence of like, you know, listen, like this is, I'm doing what Hashem wants. Hashem gave her a talent. She's mm-hmm. using it. And she's using it in a way that doesn't detract from her family. She's right. using it in a way that is, you know, balanced. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated her clarity of that about just saying yes to what she could.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's such a good
And she's also point. Using her talent to bring in Parnassa for her family. And she also has that struggle. It's like, am I just going to be an advertising machine or am I going to still make the content that I want to create? So thank you, Zaya, really for being vulnerable and sharing your journey with us. I appreciate that so much about her. You know, like you said, we think, you know, someone's a comedian or someone's an actor and they're going to come on and like have a certain persona. But she, for me, you know, it was so amazing to hear like her depth and her thoughtfulness and you know, more of like a quiet personality when you're talking to someone, but like they're really this powerhouse that like just lights up when they get on a stage. So yeah. That was sort of fun.
Here's this episode's takeaway. Laughter is the best medicine, and we can learn from Zaya to not take ourselves too seriously and to try to lighten up the atmosphere if we find ourselves feeling stressed with all of our Purim prep. Let's try to take this message with us this coming Purim.
Finally, we are so grateful that Town Appliance has partnered with us to promote our podcast this year. And we're so excited to let everyone know about them.
Woohoo!
Town Appliance is really the go-to appliance store, serving thousands of customers since 1979. You can check out their gorgeous showrooms in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore. But if you live out of town, they do ship. And you'll get the same individualized customer service they're known for just over the phone, walking you through step-by-step to address your appliance needs. Check out their website, www.townappliance.com. You can order whatever appliance you're looking for on their website. So when you're in the market for your next appliance, think Town Appliance, the obvious choice.
And finally, a big thank you to Yid Cards for sponsoring this episode of DMC. We are really excited to share this incredible platform with you, and you can send your gorgeously designed invitations digitally and manage your entire guest list through the Yid Cards platform. So no more sending invitations to an address which doesn't exist anymore. I still get invitations for people who lived in this house like a few owners before us, just so you know. There are so many beautiful design templates to choose from. Yid Cards makes it simple to curate all your info in one place. You can update contact info, create customized invite messages, schedule, send time, and set up calendar reminders to efficiently remind your guests about the big day.
So ooh, clever.
I so appreciate that. I need reminders. You got to check out yidcards.com and see how it all works. You can find the link and contact information in our show notes. You know that. We make it easy for you. And have fun choosing your invitations and creating your guest list for your next simcha. We hope you've stayed on to the end of this episode because we have two awesome things to tell you, not just one, two. Number one, our next episode is with Alana Cowland about her new book on anxiety called The Moderately Anxious Everybody. It's a great conversation and we cannot wait to bring it to you. Also, we are planning to integrate some AMA, Ask Me Anything, into DMC. This is your opportunity to ask us anything. How? Email us your questions to dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. You can also DM us on Instagram or PM us on Facebook. And we cannot wait to put this together for you and to share like a little bit of, I guess, behind the scenes of us, like, you know, so send us those questions.
Thanks to all our listeners for the wonderful emails, DMs, and PMs you send us. Reading these really make our day and help us keep going to create what we hope is deep and meaningful content to accompany you on your day. Also, a special shout out to those of you who have taken the time to rate and review our podcast. It really is a huge help, so thank you. In case you forgot, you want to email us. The email is dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. See you next episode.